Hey, everybody. Welcome. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountRecovery.net, and I want to welcome you to today's webinar where we're talking about how to ensure agents don't forget what they learned during training. Training collectors is essential. Nobody would hire a collector and then turn him or her loose on the phone without training them about the right way to engage with consumers. But where companies sometimes fall short is making sure that collectors remember to use what they learned during training after training is done. Today in this webinar, which is being sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning, we've got a panel of experts here to break down how to make sure agents don't forget what they learned during training and the steps you should be taking to make sure that doesn't happen. As I mentioned, this webinar is being sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning. Peak Revenue Learning's Knowledge Source is a training platform that helps companies address the biggest challenge in learning and knowledge retention globally. It's called the forgetting curve. If you haven't heard of the forgetting curve, or if you forgot it, you've no doubt seen the results in your organization. The forgetting curve describes the rapid, dramatic deterioration of retained knowledge after learning events, whether that is new hire or other types of training. And all your people experience this, whether they are new or seasoned team members. The results are mistakes and complaints, missed revenue and dissatisfaction, rework and higher turnover. This leads to increased regulatory, financial, contractual, and reputational risk. Knowledge Source will turn the forgetting curve into deep learning, enabling your team to rapidly acquire crucial skills and knowledge, and more importantly, help them retain it. Knowledge Source will help make your job easier and empower your people with the knowledge they need to thrive. You can learn more at peakrevenuelearning.com, and we're going to hear from Chris Rickman from Peak Revenue Learning a little later in our conversation. Let me introduce you now to our panelists. Ken Aldrich has been working in training and quality for some of the largest BPO firms in the world for the last 25 years. He currently leads a team of trainers and quality auditors in support of revenue recovery and customer service operations at Harris & Harris in Chicago. When not in the office, Ken enjoys reef diving and exploring the architecture and history of Chicago. Gwen Gullickson has more than 11 years in the industry. She currently holds the role of Director of Compliance and Training. As a collector, she loved finding a way to work within the rules, pushing the boundaries without breaking the law. As a trainer, it became all about showing people that the rules don't have to limit their ability to find solutions. Now it's all about making sure we know what the next rule is going to be and how to deal with it when it happens. As challenging as this industry can be, she loves it. Greg Graffino's been in the ARM industry since 2010, where he started from the ground up as a frontline collector for Williams & Fudge. He quickly moved into a team leader role and then on to becoming their director of training. In his 10 years as the director of training, he recreated their training processes and philosophies. In recent years, he ushered in the new age remote workforce by becoming their recruiting and onboarding specialist, attracting collection talent from across the country. These efforts and results with Williams & Fudge were recognized 4 times by Training Magazine's Training Apex Awards as a worldwide ranking of organizations that excel at training and human capital development. Greg also became a certified ACA training specialist and has been spent the last several years making the rounds as a subject matter expert at ACA conventions, a repeat participant with Collector Live, and a staple on webinars, including those, of course, hosted here at Accounts Recovery. In 2023, Greg joined the vendor side of the industry and became the North American sales manager for Interpros. In this position, he enthusiastically connects with our industry partners to provide innovative collection software solutions that are at the forefront of pushing the ARM space forever forward and increasingly profitable. Everybody who's watching us live today is absolutely invited to ask questions and submit comments during the course of our webinar. You can use the chat or the Q&A to submit your questions and comments. If you would prefer to participate anonymously, click on the anonymous button in the Q&A, and anything you send to us, I promise, is sent anonymously. Okay. Jumping into our conversation. So curious, you know, I've made no joke or, you know, I've not hidden the fact that I have never worked in a collection agency, never stepped foot in a collection agency, never attempted to collect a debt in my life. So I'm just curious, how much of the training do people tend to forget? You know, Ken, why don't you kick us off?
Sure. At Harris & Harris, we generally hire people who have some training experience or training experience, but collections experience. So they have certain things they know already, but depending on which client they're training for, which vertical they're going into, how much do they forget? I would say, 40, 50% of it, 75, 80, 90% of it the first day they go on the phone. Under stress, they forget everything they just learned in 2 weeks of classroom training. They forget that right away. And then it will come back over a little bit of time. But in general, even if they're using these skills regularly or trying to, skills decay. People get lazy. They take shortcuts. They stop doing things. And if nobody corrects that, that becomes their new normal. And there's a slow decay in their skills. So I don't have a hard percentage number. It's a little bit different for everybody, but truthfully, unless they come out of the gate utilizing 100% of what they learned and continuing to utilize that every single day, then it's going to decay. They're going to start to lose things.
Well, Ken, the actual number is 53.4%.
So 40 to 60, I was in there.
Yeah. Check my math on that one there, but regardless of what that number is, it is going to be very different for each individual. And there's a ton of factors on what you're delivering and how you're delivering it. But I think the biggest takeaway there is there's no assumptions. It's a guarantee that folks will forget. I mean, just the other day, my wife's telling me something that was apparently very important. And I'm nodding my head and it sounded like it made sense. And 10 minutes later, it was like it was never there. So we are no different than the folks we're trying to onboard. And we have to recognize that. So we'll get into, I'm sure, as the conversation evolves, methodology and best practices for helping to retain that information through your delivery methods and your timing of those methods. But that's a brand new person. They're not just learning how to collect debt. Even if they are an experienced individual that you brought in, the whole HR side of the aisle, the excitement of learning all the other processes, right? We want them to learn how to make money for the company, but all the other exciting things that they're trying to ingest at that time frame just adds to the noise, and we need to take that into serious consideration.
They both make great points. I don't really have a lot more to add to that other than, I mean, you use it or you lose it. You have to hit the ground running and start using everything that you picked up in training, and the things that you aren't able to use first are going to be the first things to go. And you're going to have to retouch on things that, you know, maybe are more one-off situations. You could have trained for every scenario. And if it is not a scenario we're encountering once we go live, it doesn't stick.
That is a hugely important point. If you do your training in the beginning and you train for less likely scenarios, right? So, you know, let's say you spend 80% of your training effort and your time and your resources on training the things that are going to be done every single day. And then you do these one-off little quick lessons on stuff that's less common that they might encounter once a week or maybe only once a month. That stuff, as Gwen just said, if they're not using it, they lose it very quickly. And that's something in general that I don't think a lot of training programs consider is that you do need to spend kind of a non-intuitive amount of time reinforcing things that just don't happen very often, because otherwise all that learning goes away.
Yeah, the use it or lose it, right? I've certainly learned over the years through our own trial and error and faults that you can't teach them a collection tactic or utilizing a piece of software on a Monday, but they never actually put it into use on a Thursday, right? If you're going to teach them something on Monday, like here's how our phone system works, then hopefully it's a hands-on environment and hopefully they're going to put that into use as you're doing it or immediately after, right? That's how those sticking points are going to land the best for you, right? And again, going back to my early days and some of my first new hire classes was the drinking from a fire hose. And don't you remember we told you that on Monday? No, they don't remember. There was a couple 8-hour days in between then and now. So if you show them something or discuss something, then the sooner you put that into action, much more likelihood that's going to stick for that individual. And that's no different for any of us.
Yeah. When you're designing a training curriculum, training without practice is not training. If they aren't putting it into use, all you're doing is explaining. You're demonstrating. There is a strong desire to only tell them things one time because of the money, right? you don't want to spend a bunch of time repeating yourself in training because it's hard to tell your executive team or your operations group that, yeah, we've done this lesson 3 times or they've practiced this 12 times. And there is a sense that, well, I told you how to do it once. Why can't you just do it? It doesn't work like that. You do have to design and put the repetition, that spaced out repetition. A training course, right? The post office did this in the 60s, and they did one of the only like really large scale studies on how people learn that was rigorous, that they tested, because they had a big experimental population, the Postal Service, and they tested it out and they did controlled experiments. And if you have 8 hours of material and you train it in 8 hours and then you let them loose and they go make use of it, some of it right away, some of it 6 weeks from now, then it's going to have a certain level of efficiency. They will forget big chunks of it. Whereas if you take that 8 hours of material and you spread it out over several different training sessions and you space it out, then they retain better. It is just, it's science at this point that spaced repetition is kind of the way everybody learns. You demonstrate it, you explain it, you show it, they read it, you show them a video, you have them practice in a one-on-one role play. Learn the process, learn the policy, learn the procedure. And then you have to train it. And the training part is the practice. The practice is the training. The original presentation, it's nice to have the platform skills and everything else, but that's not where your focus should be if you want them to retain the material.
I think that we sometimes, and I say we, that well, certainly myself, when you make the distinction between a new hire who is no experience whatsoever, which I know is common enough in our space,
yeah,
versus the seasoned veteran that's coming into your office. And I've made the mistake of training them on our specific software systems and processes, but thinking that, you know, the talk off to our desire, the negotiation tactics, things along those lines that they already had, you know, in their pocket or that they're well armed to do. And you kind of forget that they could be coming to you with some really bad habits, or they could come to you prior from not a great training environment or a supportive environment. Maybe that's one of the reasons they left, but you have to almost treat that experienced new hire no different than your no experienced new hire until, of course, you know, they prove that they've learned the objective or they're at a good spot to move forward. So, and if you're hiring in batches or new hire classes that are a combination of both, then treat them all the same as a brand new hire, like they never did the job. If you're bringing in a batch of new hires that are all experienced, well, then kind of let them dictate what you think needs to happen, but make no assumptions that you can go quicker just because they have certain experience behind them.
Yeah. The old saying is that practice doesn't make perfect. Practice makes permanent. Practice makes permanent. So those bringing in people with established practices, they may have been doing this for years, decades. They've done it thousands or tens of thousands of times. It's often harder to break those habits than it is to create new ones.
Yeah. You know, and Ken, when you say, you know, practice doesn't have to be perfect. Yeah, 100%. And specifically from the non-experienced side of the aisle, they're coming to you with a bit of apprehension, like, oh my gosh, I have to talk to a stranger and ask them for money. I distinctly remember my first couple phone calls hoping that nobody would answer, right? And of course, they didn't answer. And I was like, oh, this is easy. And then you come to that quick realization, like, oh yeah, you also came here to support your family and make money. So I actually need to talk to people. So a lot of these folks can come to you, even if that's the experienced folks, with that bit of anxiety or apprehension to have that first talk off with the consumer. And in my early days of making some mistakes, you know, we might not have got you on the phone till day 5 or day 6. And that whole 5 or 6 days where you're doing lessons and talking about things, in the back of their mind, that anxiety is building about, you know, okay, today's easy, I don't have to talk to anyone, but I know it's coming. And the practice part is, to your point again, it's not about being perfect right away. It's about getting over that hump of anxiety and saying, ah, I did it. I jumped into the pool for the first time. I didn't drown. I still have a lot to work on with my stroke, but I'm not going to drown. I'm going to be okay. And that kind of gets put aside, which in the real world opens up their mind to be more receptive to the additional training and efforts you're making, when you can kind of squash that anxiety and get a little practice under their feet, so they know, like, oh, this wasn't the worst thing in the world. I survived and it worked like it was supposed to.
I'm going to jump in quick here and just hit the pause button briefly on the conversation, which has been great so far. I got plenty more to talk about, but just wanted to invite Chris Rickman from Peak Revenue Learning, which is sponsoring today's webinar. Come on and say a few words. Chris.
Thank you, Mike. And hello, everyone. We're grateful for the opportunity to sponsor today's webinar. Our company provides Knowledge Source, a leading knowledge skills and compliance training application for companies with collection operations. Actually, Knowledge Source is aimed at exactly what the subject matter today is about helping people reinforce what they've been learning, do it in a way that really drives knowledge much more deeply into their memory through a many different ways of approaching it. As mentioned earlier, this problem of forgetting things, it's a phenomenon that's been known for really a long time. It impacts, as was said earlier, anyone that's training anyone. It's called the forgetting curve, and it describes the dramatic, rapid deterioration of knowledge that people have gotten in a training event. This could be any type of training, you hire or other types. It leads to increased mistakes and complaints and missed revenue, dissatisfaction, and contributes to general or greater turnover. A problem that many organizations share is considering employee development to be an expense rather than an investment. This view can have a detrimental impact on morale, motivation, and retention. There was a study by IBM at one time that employees who feel they're not being developed to help reach their career goals are 12% more likely to leave their company. Many of the folks I speak to recognize that the outdated model of onboarding training followed by annual refresher training is really inferior to a model where spaced, repetitive micro-learning promotes that deeper learning. Our clients are companies that want to build and maintain a higher level of assurance that the staff members have mastered, and more importantly, are maintaining their mastery of the knowledge and skills they need to have when they're interacting with consumers. In summary, Knowledge Source is going to increase quality, decrease risk, grow revenue, lower costs, and help you reduce turnover. To find out more about us, you can visit peakrevenuelearning.com or give me a call. I'm at 803-521-0031, and we're here to help make your job easier and for both you and your company to be more successful. Thank you.
Excellent. Thanks, Chris, and thanks again to Peak Revenue Learning for sponsoring today's webinar. Again, peakrevenuelearning.com is the website. Ken brought up something that I wanted to circle back on and curious to kind of get everyone's thoughts on, and that's this sort of concept of sort of forgetting something versus sort of like decaying and just kind of not remembering something. Is there a difference between the two inside an operation? Is it something that you need to address differently, or do you handle both situations the same?
Gwen's going to answer that one. I decided. Then I'll piggyback on that. Yeah. Calls you out.
I'm mute.
I don't know that I understand what his difference was implied there. I mean, obviously you're going to have things that maybe you learn in training that when you hit the floor are not handled the same as what they're presented to you. And that's what I would consider decay versus forgetting. But since it was his statement.
I'll clarify what I meant by that. That, I mean, we all kind of, I would say that the difference between forgetting means like, okay, here's a process. I've been given this. I'm supposed to do these things in this order. And I simply do not remember to do something, right? I forgot to do that, or I forgot how to do a multi-stage task. how do I record this? What notes do I leave on an account? How do I process this payment? I forgot, literally forgot. Decay is I found out that even if I don't do it, I still make enough money. I still do okay, right? That decay is skill decay where they knew how to do it. They remembered how to do it. They may have done it dozens or hundreds of times, and they know in the back of their head that they're supposed to do it, but they're just not doing it because they found a shortcut that works for them and nobody is holding them accountable for it.
So, I think a great example of that decay could be in like payment negotiation skills where right off the bat, you're live listening, you're shadow listening, and they're trying to do everything right. And they're following all the teachings and best practices. And maybe they have a couple early successes and then they start to go off more and more on their own. And then perhaps they get into a series of easy payments or the consumer just saying, oh, you know, I'll give you $100. And you're like, cool. Why would I need to counter that? Why would I need to deep dive into your financials, right? Like, and you just start to take those payments, but those start to build up over time. And you think
it's called getting the good paper. You get the good paper and you get the good paper and it's easy and you fall into sloppy habits and you just like, I just want to get to the next call, the next call, the next call, the next call. So they're pulling the handle on the slot machine, but they're not putting effort into each call because they just want to get to the easy payments. And that's
or
just
something like a potential dispute where you could be like, just another dispute, go through the processes and move on, or going through that training of trying to overcome, starting to be inquisitive about it, ask for documentation and things like that, where you could potentially in that call or that communication overcome that, right? As opposed to taking the easy way out. And the more you do it and the longer it's been since you tried to overcome a dispute or engage in a real negotiation, that's absolutely the definition of a decaying skill set. And if you're live listening and doing audits, you'll hear it, especially the live listening, and you can fix it a lot quicker versus let's listen to a couple calls from last month. Well, a couple hundred calls have gone out since last month. Fix it as soon as possible.
I think a general best practice at companies is to, if not combine, at least like federate training and quality, that to get that feedback loop real close so that training is finding out, getting that information from your QA groups, like, okay, what trends are we seeing? What are people forgetting the most? What's decaying most quickly? Where do we need to do individual coaching? And where is it warranted to put some investment into learning development and create a lesson and provide it to a number of people? Training time is an expense. I mean, literally an expense. You're not making money while they're in that training meeting. So, you know, being able to evaluate from QA data, is this an individual issue or is this a systemic issue? And you address them in different ways.
Sorry, Gwen, I didn't mean to call you. I was just messing with you.
No, that's okay. I agree with Ken. I like his answer.
Let me ask Gwen a different question then. Oh, okay. Not decay versus forgetting. How do you know, sometimes, look, we all make mistakes. We all forget things from time to time, but it's not necessarily that we've completely forgotten it. We just forgot it that one time. You know, like the times my wife reminds me I forget to say I love you at the end of the phone call. I don't not love my wife. I just sometimes forget to say it at the end of the call. How do you distinguish between a collector who's just maybe forgotten something once versus someone who's kind of completely forgotten something and needs to be retrained or how to have a conversation about something? I don't think you want to sort of, there's probably a dynamic where you don't want to jump the gun too early and start retraining someone on something maybe they just forgot one time, but you don't want it to become a problem either. So how do you kind of manage that balance?
That kind of depends on where they're at in the process. You know, soon after training, I think I'm a big proponent of call calibration, pulling people in, letting them listen to their own calls, seeing if they can identify the things that they forgot or didn't forget. And I don't think that there is a point in your time on the floor where those become less efficient. I think everybody can benefit from those, but knowing how and when to identify when they're needed is a big part. And that's where your QA comes in with your training and those trend identifications. Everybody's going to be different. Some people know how to ask for help, and some people will sit there and stew and just doing it wrong until somebody points it out.
I think, Mike, I had a good thought, I think. We'll see. What kind of resources are you also providing for your folks, right? And when they're forgetting in that moment, and I think the key difference is sometimes you know you're forgetting something, or sometimes you don't know what you don't know. I might not even know I'm forgetting it in the moment. And I kind of go through a decayed talk off, right? But in those, for those moments, for the adult employees that we have who recognize, oh, they asked this question or this scenario came up and I'm recognizing that I forgot it. You know, time is money, and, you know, these consumers want to get off the phone as fast as possible. And obviously, as trainers or on the new hire side, of course, we want to be there in every moment or have someone in the row or someone in the online chat that they can bounce questions off of really quickly. All those things are great, but sometimes you also need to have a well-established resource of documentation. And as an example, back in my days, we of course had training documents and libraries and stuff, but you'd have to go through that and kind of search kind of Google style, and you might get a list of articles or might point you in the direction of a training document, which you then would have to kind of read through and find the items you were looking for. And I'd be curious today if, and I don't know the answer, if agencies are utilizing an internal like AI LLM. So like as an example, on my side now, on the vendor side, you know, we often get involved in RFP processes for competing for business. And we're filling out these monstrous questionnaires. And of course, as I go through them, like I don't remember all these answers. I have to utilize resources. And we plugged in an internal AI LLM that ties in all of our policies, procedures, documentation, everything that we could throw into it prior RFPs. And for those pain points for me, you know, I can go in there and type in a question, and as you all know how these LLM works, is I'm getting a great resource of immediate answers. So I bet there's application where agencies can take all their policies and procedures, all of their training documentation, have a document repository for it that's fed into that LLM. So in those events where a live trainer is not available or a roommate is there to assist them, in reality, that agent needs to be able to do two things. One, recognize that they're forgetting something in that moment. And two, being able to just communicate, hey, Mr. Consumer, that's a great question. Give me just a couple seconds and I'm going to get that answer for you to buy you some of that time. And I think it's not being utilized today just from an additional supportive thing, right? You can train your agents early on that we have this tool. And in those times of need, don't forget that you can use that as a resource. And just let the consumer know you're going to get the answer. Just hang tight for me for about 30 seconds.
I mean, how many of the agencies out there, for people watching, how many of you guys actually have a formal knowledge management system for your
That's for a great your, question.
For your company?
Because or when was it last updated?
When was each article updated? Where's the version history on it? There's a profession that is involved in that. I wish we had a more robust one internally. But back to the original question that Mike had asked, which was, how do you tell that whether this is just a one-off, you know, brain fart, you know, my train of thought derailed, as compared to something that is more continual, like they actually lost this piece of information and they're not getting it back. They're not, they've actually decayed rather than just having a blip. And the best way, I mean, to bring in the AI piece, speech analytics, total call transcription, it's very easy to be like, have your supervisor, your team lead or your trainer go in and say, I'm reviewing a call and I'm noticing, well, they didn't mention the payment processing fee. Was it just an accident? Go into the search bar, type in fee on every call that had a payment confirmation. Every one of those should have a fee disclosure. And you can instantly see for the last 6 months, how many times did they do a payment confirmation and not say the word fee? And that will tell you the tools that we have now, speech analytics, AI driven, where you can immediately validate your assumptions. Because that's what coaching is you notice a gap, you assume what's driving that gap, and then you got to validate it. And now it's just You don't have to go listen to 1,500 calls to try to figure out and catch the calls where they make the mistake. Speech analytics, total call transcription, whatever platform you use, that makes it a lot faster than it used to be if you've got that capability. Otherwise, you're going to go to your QA team and you're going to ask them because they should know whether this is one-off or it's happened on multiple calls.
So we've identified, let's say, we've identified there's a problem. There's a collector who's on the floor not saying something or not engaging properly, or just, you know, there's a need for an intervention or some sort of conversation. What's the process? Is there a sort of stair step in terms of escalating, or how do you kind of address what needs to be addressed?
That's a fun question, Mike, because I was just thinking about how we can discover if there's a true knowledge gap, which could be a result of just normalcy or a reflection on our own methods and efforts. Or worst case scenario, this person perhaps doesn't care or isn't trying, right? And I'm not going to give you time frames or instances. That's all for you internally to kind of map out. But there should be something that you have mapped out that says we can reflect and say we have made honest and legitimate efforts with this individual that has seemingly worked for the majority of the other folks who are doing well here. But this one individual, and it could be one or two or a combination of both. Well, maybe they're just not the smartest person in the world and they can't handle this job, or maybe they just really don't care and they're just kind of collecting that paycheck. But the sooner you discover that there's a gap, the sooner you discover they're not retaining it after your legitimate efforts. And you can hear these things in the tone of their voice and the obvious results or non-results. But the sooner you present that to the individual that you are hearing or not hearing things or not seeing certain things, and the expectation is there to map out for them that we are expecting an increase in your retention and an increase in your results. We're putting the time and effort into you. Then, yeah, at some point in time, you stop spending money on that person and wish them a good day. But hopefully you can avoid that, right? But that certainly is a possibility where it's not to your fault, right? It could be the other side of the aisle, just not putting in the effort.
Again, for this one, I don't know, you may have been on these type of calls with clients where they find an error of some kind. And it's often operations immediate assumption that it is a training gap. But then you're just like, well, on this date, here's the assessment. They passed the assessment. They answered the question correctly. Let's just go ask this person. You ask them, hey, bud, do you know what our payment processing fee is? Yeah, it's $2.65. It's $5. It's whatever. I'm like, okay, cool. And you know you're supposed to say it on every call? Sure, I say it on every call. Okay, looking at your last 30 calls, you said it on 3 of them. Out of 20, 27, you didn't. 3 you did. And, you know, I've always said that if you ask them and they know what is correct, then it's not a training issue anymore. Or it could be a training issue. They need that. They need the coaching. It's like they know how to run, but you've got to remind them to run faster. You have to set the pace for them. You have to remind them, you know how to do it. We know you know how to do it. And you can either say, we're going to punish you if you don't do it right, or we're going to fire you if you don't do it right, or you can coach. And that can fall on QA side, depending on what your QA model is. Are they detached and objective, or are they coaches? If they're coaches, then you've got to set up a plan. It needs to be, again, that spaced repetition that, okay, we know you know. I mean, often it's don't say these words. Don't say the words, collection efforts will continue in a threatening tone. Don't say those words, okay? And how do you train somebody when, you know, you tell them, don't say these words. Do you understand the words you're not supposed to say? Yeah, I'm not supposed to say collection efforts will continue without being specific. That's right. You're not supposed to do that. Do you know why? Yeah, because we can get sued for threatening people, but we're not being specific. We're not, you know, actually saying we're going to do this and then following up. Yeah, puts us at risk. Great. So you understand that. You understand what you are not supposed to say. Are you going to say that anymore? Not going to say it anymore. The next call, collection efforts will continue. And you're like, okay, I'm going to pull you off the phone. here's what you need to say. And to coach somebody, you've got to come back to that again and again and catch them. When every time they say it, you got to remind them. And if they can, you know, clarify that they understand, but they're just not capable of acting on it, then coaching is your next step. And if that fails, if you've actually followed up and you've actually been consistent and you have been reminding them, at a certain point, you just have to accept that they are not capable. And that's where you decide this is not a job you can do.
There's a great comment from MM in the chat there. And I know who you are, MM. Hi. Thanks for the comment. But they kind of reference where they appreciate or like when they have an agent who is proactive or self-aware of a mistake. So, you know, Gwen, you could be doing that call audit and you hear that thing. And before you can even make a face or say the words that are going to indicate that something could have been better here, they are quick to the punch and say, oh, that's the point where I should have said X. And I would agree, MM, that that is exactly what you want, because that means you've also created a general culture or learning and training environment where they feel comfortable enough to come out and acknowledge or admit their mistake or their shortcoming, and also know that you did teach it and they did have a bit of retention, but just maybe in that moment of nervousness, or as in Ken's words, that little brain fart, great choice of words, they just happen to have that. And, but you would praise that. I would definitely make sure that you are praising to them that you are thankful that they are self-admitting or self-aware of that. Or maybe they just get off the phone and they come to you and say, oh my gosh, I just got off the phone and I totally forgot X, Y, Z. Well, that's certainly not the opportunity to be upset with that person, right? You would first praise them, right? Thank you for bringing that to my attention. You know, don't worry about it. We can fix that, whatever. But what's going to happen with that person is they'll go back to their row or they'll get back into their chats and that conversation can come up and they'll be like, you know, hey, that guy Ken's not so bad. It's okay if you tell him you made a mistake. You know, he's not going to get mad at you. So it's better to be forthcoming if you recognize that you did something wrong or you forgot something. And that's part of that training environment that you're providing from day one, and that overall piece of the pie that we contribute to the overall company culture is knowing that I can be self-admittent and I can bring mistakes forthcoming and I can get positive help in helping me retain that for the next time.
But it's safe.
Yeah.
It's safe to admit that you are not perfect, that it is just out of training, or that it's been months and months, months and years. And just, again, being able to recognize and realize that you made the mistake is not, it's generally a good indication that you can self-correct. Rather than the people that, even though you rub their nose in it and you play the call recording and you show them the transcript and then you show them the subpoena and the complaint and the lawsuit, and they're like, no, I never made any errors. They just got the, I refuse to admit that I made a mistake ever. That's not really coaching. If they refuse.
And that person is telling you that a problem will happen again with no accountability.
Yeah. They refuse to admit that there is an issue at all. And that's going to be an HR concern, not really a training concern at that point. Mistakes are good. Refusing to learn from mistakes is what's bad. If no one ever made mistakes, I would not have a job.
Well, I wouldn't know half the stuff I know if I didn't do it wrong the first time I tried.
Yep. And you know, speaking of that, Gwen, the first time someone tries, right, you should be there with them. Don't send them into the deep end alone. Whether you're in office, hybrid, remote, there's plenty of ways you can do live listening, shadow listening. Something we haven't necessarily brought up yet to this point as well is, you know, a lot of our organizations, there's that main single point person who handles the bulk majority of the training, which there's a lot of good advantages to that with consistency and having the accountable person to look to. But another great tactic to deploy is bringing in other folks. So again, depending on the size of your organization and the personnel you have, but, you know, deploying programs for mentorship where other agents can work their way into higher positions over the time frame. But I always equated it to, like, you know, kids get tired of hearing their parents. Like,
my boy is 12 years old now, and I'm really just starting to see where, like, oh, you don't really care what I say anymore. It's coming. That phase is coming upon you, right? But if that cool uncle shows up or that cool aunt shows up, you're going to listen to that person, or your soccer coach tells you the same thing I told you. You're going to hear it and respond to it maybe a little bit differently. So I've always been a big advocate where even some of the live listenings or the call audits to kind of spread that wealth out a little bit. So they're not just hearing from you, but if they're hearing the same things from multiple other people that they also trust and can rely on, then that kind of helps solidify that message. And you're also kind of spreading out that workload and giving opportunities to other in your organization. But for those of us out there that are taking on the bulk majority or the responsibilities of your training, look to other ways to leverage the other smart and motivated folks within your walls to spread that same message and to support those folks as they're learning.
So I think that kind of segues into another point that was on the topics list was, you know, how do you decide when you want to pull somebody back into training? How do you decide after they've been out there for long enough? And I think the part of it is resources, money, taking collectors off the phone is a hit to your bottom line. So you want to do it only if it's going to be the most effective thing to do. And having a cadre of mentors and skilled up team leads. I mean, sometimes your training dollar is best spent on leadership development. Make sure that your team leads can be coaches, that they understand that. I mean, a lot of collection team leads, they feel like they are administrators. They are there to do paperwork. They're there to process things. But sometimes they lose sight of that they are the coaches. They should be the avenue where that training is touched up, where the things that get forgotten get reminded. And that's the team lead, is to have a finger on the pulse of their team and on the piece on individuals and understand that you can't tell a human being once. It doesn't work like that. That you do have to remind people, even tenured agents, even agents who are star performers, they're going to forget things over time. And somebody needs to remind them. That can be a targeted micro learning, or it can be a weekly team meeting or a calibration where all the peers get together and say, let's listen to a couple of calls. Oop, you forgot to do that. You forgot to do this. Scaling up your team leads is important.
We got the chat alive now, which thank you to the attendees. It always makes these things a lot better. So Frank has a couple good ones here. And I fully agree, Frank, with the calibrated group calls. It's one thing to have a private one-on-one call listening session with a trainer on a single Zoom call or behind closed doors. And, you know, I can take it from someone higher than me that I need to calibrate some things. But if we were to tell you, you know, hey, today's Tuesday and next Monday we're going to have this call review in a group, I know that this is coming up. It's adding a little, just the right amount of peer pressure where nobody wants to go into that room and have some of their, we'll say low efforts. There's a difference between I'm still learning the skill or I clearly put a low effort into that call. So when you know you're going to be going into a group calibration session, you're going to have that elevated sense of pride in the product you put out. And if you do these, even if it's not on a regular scheduled basis, but your staff knows that these things get scheduled at certain random points in time, I maybe don't even know when that next one is, but it could be at any point in time, then I'm constantly, this shouldn't be my motivating factor, but it can help a little bit to make sure that, hey, if I get into a group session that I'm not the one with egg on my face, right? But to that point as well is when you're in those sessions, you're also hopefully going to hear some of your peers have some really stellar performances. And one of the things that I think, maybe pat myself in the back here, I thought I did a really good job with was providing to our staff a whole litany of a library of great call recording examples. And they'd be all based on topics, whether that was overcoming a dispute, a master negotiation, a bankruptcy talk-off, this consumer's clearly trying to bait us, and finding those examples and encouraging your team to give you those examples and to showcase them. And it doesn't have to be just your top collectors, but the folks that are just in this one example of a call, they hit an absolute home run. And if you were to do something like that, then take a little time and effort to edit those calls down. So If I need to hear the negotiation, the awesome part of this negotiation, I don't need to maybe listen to the 10 other minutes because that's taking time away from me. Just get to the chase on some of those topic specific things. And you should be providing opportunities for your staff to not just hear you, whether live audits or post-call audits, tell you what could have, should have, would have been done, where you can also provide, here's how the best of the best are doing it, or here's our best known example of this topic. And if you can kind of listen to these calls at any time during the day, right? I would never get mad if someone went from one call to the next, put themselves like in the phone system on pause or something, went into the training document library and listened to two or three calls. There would be no way I would look at that person and be like, that's not a good use of your time. I would thank them for utilizing those resources and having an avenue for some self-teaching as well.
This call may be recorded or monitored for training and quality purposes.
Yeah.
How many of us actually use that for training and quality purposes? For training purposes in specific, building a good call library. We do the monthly calibrations for each group, and that is a meeting of a set of collectors with a team lead, and the team lead's job in that is to then provide the call transcript and the call recording to the training department when the calibration is over, along with a calibration sheet of what went well, what could have gone better, and best practices for that call. Then we take that, and it takes about an hour to take that and put it into a training template, and it goes out to the entire group. So you can leverage small group calibrations, and with the tools that we have now, you can create a lesson, put it in your learning management system, and give it to everybody with a little quiz at the end of it. AI tools can make that very quick to do. So we do 36 of those a year, 3 verticals, 1 a month.
There you go.
And they know, Greg, that their voice might end up in one of those if they have a call that is coachable. We try not to take the really bad ones, but we take calls that have coachable elements in them. And nobody really wants to be the example.
And to Frank's other comment about transitional phases, I think that is a great practice.
Nesting.
Nesting is a common way to phrase that. But I would say that there is a minimum time for everybody, whether that's a few days or you fill in the blank, which you feel is necessary. But it's also very subjective where you could be going through that phase with somebody, but it's clear as day that this person's a rock star and they're ready to fly. Then stop inhibiting them and let them fly, but of course do your continued follow-up down the line versus employee B needs to be in that phase a little bit longer. So I wouldn't put a hard number on the end goal length of time for that transitional phase. It's very individualized, but there should be a minimum time frame that you're doing that. That minimum time frame could be 1, 2, 3 days, just dependent on that person and situation. But yeah, that's a great way because they also know that they have that support system there for them. But again, sometimes it's time to kick them out of the nest and let them fly.
Great.
So anybody who's ever been in a traffic jam, just, you know, why don't the people at the front just go faster? Why don't we just make the training period longer? Then people won't forget anything.
No, then they rely on you. Then they rely on that and they never, you have to let people go. You can reel people back in. Keeping them too close to you for too long, in my opinion, is going to be detrimental to their ability to kind of take off and run with the things that they've done.
Yeah, you leave the training wheels on too long, and as Gwen said, they rely on them. They never actually learn to ride the bike on their own. There is that. There's the obvious reason, which if you go to your COO and say, I'd like to double the length of training, triple the length of training, they're going to laugh at you. She's going to go, no, because accounting and finance is going to come back and say, okay, well, this is the cost it takes to get a person in the door. This is the cost to pay them and the trainer and everybody else while they are less than 100% productive in training. And you want to extend that amount of time. And then we have the attrition. Training fatigue as well as people get tired of it. The great employees are just like, put me in, coach. I want to go. Let's go. Yeah. Collectors especially. Collectors are very money motivated. They want to spend their time on the phone. The good ones want to spend their time on the phone, dialing for dollars. That's what they want to do. And there's just one more thing, there's a certain point where training becomes counterproductive, where we do it even for different things that aren't. Harris & Harris has done a lot of customer service and other things where you can't train them on 100% of the situations. You can't do it. Not without a training that's 6 months long.
Right. You need that real life to be able to get in there and identify the things that you truly understood and the things that you need additional help on. And I think, you know, we kind of touched on, is it more cost effective to train them longer and put that money there? I think your money is best spent on the people who made it further out into the production environment and they need that additional support.
Yeah. I think that
part of your training program as it hopefully evolves, it's not a static thing, right? You can reassess it after almost every new hire class. And something that I've had to go through many iterations of is what is like the minimum information I need to get them to get into practice. And it doesn't need to be, we're going to be making calls all day. The first day on the phone or their first time on the phone, it could be a 30 or 60 minute exercise, not a whole sit down. But what is the minimum I need to get to you before we can crack that egg and get you comfortable with, oh, I made the phone ring, someone answered, I said hello, we talked, not a big deal. Versus some of the HR onboarding stuff or some of the other more company specific stuff. Can that wait till day 4, 5, or 6? You know, I used to go through a series of, again, not making a phone call till day 5 or 6. And then you kind of flip the script on what your training program is and say, man, on day 2 or day 3, halfway through day 2 or morning of day 3, we'll spend an hour just putting out calls. So everything starts to stick and you can kind of move the needle from there. But take a good look at what you're doing day by day, hour by hour. Are we in the classroom for too long? How many breaks are they getting? Even going back to, you know, Chris Rickman and Knowledge Source, you know, that's a product I'll happily sing praises to as I've seen it in action, right? That's like a whole nother employee for you who's delivering little mini bite-sized quizzes throughout the day that they can do simultaneous while jumping from one account to the next, just little pop-up reminders. And you set the cadence on that kind of stuff. So, I'm a big advocate for today's sponsor and, you know, go check them out. And Chris paid me to say that.
Well, space micro-learning is huge. I think that's great. But back to that question of how do you assess how long your training program should be? And the truth is we are all here to make money, and accounting and finance and the executive committee will come back to you. And the answer is always as short as we can possibly make it, while still getting trainees out with at least the set of skills they need to meet the bar. They don't need to be above the bar. They need to just meet that minimum bar. The minimum necessary standard is what you're generally going to come back with. And the truth of the matter is that from a math perspective, anything more than that is wasteful. So figuring it out is why you have training professionals. What is the minimum standard? What do you need to do? How efficient can you be? But I think that getting them on the phones as quickly as possible, getting those jitters out of the way, because it doesn't matter how long they stay in training, it's the person who's going to be nervous. It's like, oh, they're always going to come back and say, you didn't teach us this. Yeah, we did. Or, you know, yeah, no, we didn't, but you're not going to encounter that again for another 6 months. It's just not cost effective to train you on everything. We get you 70% of the way there. The rest of it, you're going to learn on the phones.
You can control what their first experience is to a degree. Not entirely, but you can put them on only outbound calls or only inbound calls, right? Whatever your flavor for that is, or stick them in a portfolio of older business just to get through the roles where, you know, not a lot of people are going to answer the phone, but I just need you to make a phone ring, or put them on the very low, the lowest balances that you have, or the easiest client that you have, whatever the case is, that helps build confidence.
Absolutely. Get them to
hold on your high ticket accounts right away. Don't put them on like the dispute hotline right away, things like that, where you can ramp them up into handling those situations, right? Just checking some of those early boxes, making some of the early learning stick, eliminating some of that potential early anxiety.
We are, yes, unfortunately just about out of time, but we do have enough time left for me to go around and ask each of you one final question. That is, if you were going to assign homework to everybody who's watching this, if there's something that everyone who's watching absolutely needed to do, what is that homework that you would assign? Greg, we'll start with you.
Thanks, Mike. I can pick any one of a thousand things, but I'm going to jump back to a point I made earlier about your document resources and internal library. What can you do to make it easy, fast, efficient, robust, updated, where I'm thinking all the worst case scenarios where there's nobody next to me, no one's on the chat, my trainer's working with somebody else, I just need an answer in this moment. What can you do to modernize that document library where I can just say, great question, ma'am, if you give me like 15 seconds, I'll be right back. I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to look up that answer and get that to you. And there's lots of very modern tools you can be using to bring that to your staff.
Excellent. Thank you. Ken?
Google spaced repetition, just those two words. It's one of the, there's a lot of mumbo jumbo and feelings in training and in adult learning theory. Spaced repetition is one of the only like evidence-based things to come out where it was experimentally verified that this is kind of how people learn, kind of how everybody. So if you are concerned about having an efficient and effective training program, I would look at that.
Excellent tip. Thank you. Gwen?
Document your training. Make sure that the things that you go over are identified so that you're not wasting your time going over the same things with somebody who's never going to get them.
Circle coaching, just doing the same thing over and over and over again.
Well, Ken, Greg, Gwen, on behalf of everybody watching and listening and walking away with a much deeper understanding and some great ideas on what to do when collectors forget things after training's over, thank you so much for being here. I know we all very much appreciate you guys taking time out of your schedule to share with everybody. So thanks to you. Chris, I want to thank you and everybody at Peak Revenue Learning for sponsoring today's webinar. Please check them out at peakrevenuelearning.com. I also want to thank everybody who's watching and listening, a lot, whether it's live or watching a recording of this. Thank you for being here and making us part of your day. If you're watching us live, we're back tomorrow with a webinar at 1 o'clock. We're going to close out the week talking about the least sophisticated consumer and how that definition and standard has changed and what you need to know about that. If you haven't signed up, there's a link in the chat, or you can find a link on the events calendar at accountsrecovery.net. We would love to see you back for that tomorrow at 1 o'clock Eastern. Until then, enjoy the rest of your day, everybody. Thank you so much for being here, and we look forward to seeing everybody soon. Thanks, everyone.